excuse me. So this talk is continuing our series on the paramitas with a little bit of extra focus today on the fourth paramita, which is effort. So let's start up my journey to how I got here. I've always been a real seeker. One of my very earliest memories, if not my earliest memory, was laying in bed at night pondering death and what's going to become of me. I might have even been in preschool, you know, and I was, you know, anxious about this. And then I go, what, you know, but Jesus rose from the dead. I kept coming back to that. And I kept, you know, I think I was going through that for like a week straight every night, you know, this. And then in junior high school, you know, still looking for answers. And I picked up the Bhagavad Gita and didn't get very far because I was a junior high school kid used to reading things like the I forget the name of the book, but the boys' version of Nancy Drew, you know, and car book. Hardy Boys, yeah. I loved those books. Alan Watts then in high school drew my attention to Zen. He really blew my mind. It was right up there with like black holes and other stuff as far as mind blowing things. I remember reading something about some of the students of Suzuki Roshi were kind of complaining about Alan Watts. You know, this isn't real Zen. And Suzuki Roshi says, no. Alan Watts is a great bodhisattva. I continued to think about these deep questions into young adulthood, I finally realized that some questions just cannot be answered. And like a gazillion people before me have realized the same thing. So kind of put them behind me. Although I still to this day like to ponder some things, you know, metaphysical questions, but I'm not really looking for an answer. It's just interesting and it's a possibility. So Buddha was also a seeker. And when he got enlightened, sitting under the Bodhi tree, at first he was not sure what to do with this, but then he realized that I've got to go out and teach people. And him going out and teaching people, that's known as the first turning of the Dharma wheel. This was Theravada Buddhism, back to the original teachings of the Buddha. The original teachings, like the Four Noble Truths, there's life is dukkha, there's suffering in life. This suffering has an origin, and he laid out the 12 links of dependent origination, which are ignorance, mental formations, consciousness, name and form, the six senses, contact, sensation, desire, clinging, existence, life, and old age, suffering, and death. And then he realized there's a way to stop this unnecessary suffering, this dukkha, which is the 12 links going backwards, going the other direction. And he also laid out a path to do this, which is the Eightfold Path, which is right view, right resolve, right speech, right conduct, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi or meditation. So suffering, origin, stopping, and path. So this first turning of the Dharma wheel was focused on individual liberation, and it was quite successful. It was also somewhat conceptual in nature, although it led to things that were not conceptual, like the Buddha's liberation and other people's liberation. The teachings were still rather conceptual. The second turning of the Dharma wheel is Mahayana Buddhism, of which Zen is a Mahayana Buddhist practice. One of the things in Mahayana Buddhism is the Bodhisattva ideal, this notion, this commitment that I will not enter Nirvana until all sentient beings have entered Nirvana. So it goes beyond just personal liberation to this commitment to all beings. It also, to do that, it's the perfection of compassion. You know, compassion is huge, a very supreme altruistic intention to just help other people, help all beings. Our root teacher, I don't know if he's the root teacher, but came to this country from Korea, Sung San So-and-so. He repeatedly said, from moment to moment, keep correct direction in your life that only helps other beings. Also in Mahayana Buddhism, we have the Prajnaparamita teachings of emptiness and interdependence or non-duality, that nothing really exists. Nothing actually has some self-nature that you can identify. It's always dependent on other things. In the Mahayana tradition, the Diamond Sutra is probably second only to the Heart Sutra in importance. And it says, all compound things are like a dream, a phantom, a bubble, or a reflection. They are like dew or lightning. Thus should we view them. So the earlier Buddhist ideas about generosity and the paramitas have a somewhat different character. When you view them from Mahayana tradition as a bodhisattva who is practicing prajna paramita, they are now, prajna means perfection, you know, this notion of going to the other shore, very transcendent. The Heart Sutra kind of shows that the when viewed with prajna paramita, the original teachings missed the boat, the boat to the other shore. we chant, and we'll chant later today, in emptiness. No ignorance, also no extinction of it, no suffering, no origination, no stopping, no path. Those four things in the Four Noble Truths. Nope, not. They don't really exist. They're not really there. No path, no cognition, also no attainment with nothing to attain. Then we have the paramitas. So the six paramitas are generosity, conduct or precepts, patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. In one way, this ordering of the paramitas makes a lot of sense because they do build upon one another. But in another way, from the prajna perspective, they all contain each other. So paramita does mean perfection, going beyond, transcendent. And since they are transcendent, ultimately they don't have a meaning, and they can't really be defined by words. Especially, you know, in our tradition, in this bodhisattva ideal, they're beyond all of ideas and concepts. They're very wide, very open. Now, the first three paramitas, generosity, conduct, and patience, really help develop compassion. Generosity is a great jumping off point. It really is a good place to start. And a lot of teachers say this is the paramita out of which all others flow. Generosity, one of the great things about that is, well, like a lot of these things, you can start doing it before you've perfected it. it's a bootstrap thing. We can start doing things and then eventually, you know, our thinking, our mind, our spirit will change to reflect what we're doing if we're committed to it. The thing about generosity too, that makes it so great, is it involves letting go. And that, as human beings, is one of our big things that we need to work on, is letting go. It's hardwired into our biology. It's not necessarily a bad thing in our biology. It's, you know, based on survival, but we can go in a better direction. We can take it further. One of the things that I've been noticing and working on a lot is being annoyed and anger, watching the news, you know, the politics and things that are going on, driving and dealing with people on the road, at work. You know, there's an individual at work that is a hard person to work with. It's a technical issue. I'm working in an engineering field, and technically, this person is incorrect, but just doesn't want to let go of what they've got. And we were talking about this yesterday, about being right. And so I know I'm right, and I really am right, but that can just cause a lot of problems. Sometimes I'm right. So what? You know, who cares? It doesn't. And the same thing too in politics, in our interactions with our family. Holding on to being right can cause a lot of suffering. It's really good to let go of it. Now, fortunately and unfortunately, I'm retiring soon, so I'm going to no longer have to work with this person, which is a shame, because it's a real opportunity for me to grow. You know, having problems in our life is wonderful, because it really is an opportunity to help us grow. Without problems, we probably wouldn't get very far. There's actually lore about the gods in the higher realms. Eventually they all fall down again, because, you know, they've got it so great, and, you know, they're gods. So in looking at this anger, more about it, I asked, so I see it, and that's one of the first things and the most important things about our practice, is it allows us to see things, you know, see what's really happening. So I can see my anger, I can see my annoyance, but when I see it, you know, then what? what do I do with this thing? And so I was talking to John G. So-and-so about it, and she was recommending, what were the words that she used? Just let it, drop it, let it go down to your center. Breathe in and then exhale and kind of let it go. And this idea of visualizing things going to my center, I found that to be really, really helpful. It's worked for me quite well. And then also now that I've been studying this, I've realized that I really don't have an anger problem. What it really is a patience problem, that third paramita. And that is something that I'm going to, that's probably the thing I need to work on the most, is some, a little bit of extra effort on studying, noticing, working with patience. Some teachers have said, and I think it's true too, that without patience, you're probably not going to be, you might not even stick with this path we've chosen for ourselves. It's kind of easy when things are going well and you're having a good retreat and everything, but when things get tough, without patience, you might just I'll practice later. I'm going to do something else now or whatever. And which is a double shame too, because when things get tough, like I was just saying, that's the time to really double down. And that's the time when you can get the most out of practice, is working through these difficulties. So let's talk a little bit about that, this fourth effort or fourth paramita. Effort. Other translations of that are vigor, zeal, perseverance, energy, continuous practice, courage, joyful effort. Now that first translation, the one that we've been referring to it a lot, is effort. That kind of has something to be desired in a way. It can put a dark tone on it. This isn't some task of drudgery, so I've got to put out this work, this effort, it's a paramita, it's a perfection. And it's being practiced by a bodhisattva, when you reach that perfection. And as a bodhisattva who's reached this perfection, it's not effort in the sense of this is something hard, I've got to do this. It, like that one translation, joyful effort, that's how the bodhisattva looks at it. They get joy out of helping other beings. So how do we achieve any of these perfections? Don't even try. Just practice at them. We're never going to achieve perfection, but we can always practice and go in that direction. All the paramitas are empty. There really are no paramitas. So that can be, knowing that can help us to lighten up a little bit, hold things lightly and just practice. Things will come of their own in time. Just start where you are and practice. We already have this pure and perfect Buddha nature. We don't need to do anything to obtain it. The Prajnaparamita Sutra in 8,000 lines has this to say about the paramita of effort. The bodhisattva who intends to wander about in birth and death for a long time, a yogin devoted to the purification of the Buddha field for welfare of beings, and who does not produce the least thought of fatigue, is endowed with the perfection of vigor and undaunted. I'll read that one more time. The bodhisattva who intends to wander about in birth and death for a long time, a yogin devoted to the purification of the Buddha field for the welfare of beings, and who does not produce the least thought of fatigue, is endowed with the perfection of vigor and undaunted. So how do we build this paramita of effort, of joyful effort? Well, we've got a good start right here. We showed up. We're in Kilche. We're in a retreat. Just doing things. Making these commitments. Practice. So, rather than you asking me questions, I'm going to ask you questions. We're going to break up into a couple groups here in person, and maybe just have one group online. And my first question will be, how do I achieve joyful effort? So I think it's pretty natural. There's the groups. Maybe someone from that side go over to that side, and I'll be shooting some more questions out to everybody here and online. Bob can shout them out or type them in. So first, start. How do I work on getting this joyful effort? So just circle up, you guys, circle up and